Thank you, Dr. Ranko, for your excellent presentation. We are now open for questions since Dr. Ranko has to catch a plane. So if you want to forward your questions. I wanted to ask you, so we usually come late to the ICU. When they call the nephrologist, it's a problem. So, you know, we did a small trial in our hospital where we had a nephrologist on site all the time, and then we had compared that to just, you know, being on call. And we saw, you know, a tremendous difference. We actually were able to decrease mortality. And the question is, you know, how do you do this? Because when we're called, you know, their patient is already fluid overload and it's in trouble. So should we just follow every patient in the ICU, or what is your suggestion?
Well, I know your work, and I congratulate you for doing this, because this was clearly following what we advocated for many years, called the Vicenza model. The Vicenza model basically is a multidisciplinary approach to the critically ill patient. The nephrologists go to make round together with the ICU physician twice a day. For that reason, we never get an emergency, because we always know what's going on. Plus, in our computer, we have all the information of the patient admitted to the ICU, so we can also follow by distance. The presence of the nephrologist in the ICU is extremely precious. We just published in Blood Purification a few weeks ago a series of four papers of the importance of the nephrologist in the ICU setting. And I think that it's very interesting what we recently developed, actually together with the Mexican fellow that was with us from Monterrey. We developed the concept of the nephrology rapid response team. In other words, we get on our phone the information of biomarkers, of fluid overload and everything, and practically, immediately, as soon as a biomarker result gets available, the nephrologist not only is informed, but is required to make a checklist at the bedside of the patient concerning toxic medications, concerning fluid, concerning all the different aspects that are suggested by the KDIGO guidelines. So I think that this is a little bit a pain on the neck, because we have to work more. But nevertheless, the possibility to increase the perception of the importance of the nephrologist in the hospital and in the ICU is probably the secret of survival of our specialty.
I agree. So there's a couple of more questions. Have you looked at serum sodium versus outcomes in your ICU patients? What is the optimum serum sodium, and what is the proposed CRRT and RCT sodium 135 versus 145 in the prescription therapies?
There is a secondary analysis going on sodium level. We found that there is a significant amount of patients developing hyponatremia, and so we are carefully analyzing now how this correlates with mortality. Nevertheless, when you prescribe your dialysate sodium, I think you should be ready to personalize this prescription as well, depending on patient. However, if you exchange enough fluid over time, electrolyte imbalances tend to normalize because of the quite large fluid exchange in and out, and at the end you tend to have your sodium in plasma water similar to the sodium in dialysate with the complete equilibration.
Oh, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the great, excellent talk. One of the concerns we have in the United States is, and I don't know how it's practiced where you are, we have hospitalists, nocturnists, emergency room physicians who supplement our, you know, absence in the hospital. By the time we're asked to see the patient, the patient's had 6 liters of IV fluids for shock in the ER, and they've had another 5 to 7 liters. We're replacing physicians with mid-levels, and unfortunately, by the time nephrologists get involved, things are chaotic. So it my suggestion and maybe an idea of talking to the emergency room physicians and the intensivists, because we understand what's happening, but they don't. They give sodium chloride, normal saline by the gobs. As soon as somebody hits the ER, they have this criteria of controlling shock within the first couple hours, and by the time we even realize that, or they even realize something's wrong, the patients are 10 to 15 liters fluid overloaded. Thank you.
Well, first of all, we should not blame too much our ICU and emergency colleagues. The problem is that they have to deal with a very severe condition, and the first protocol is to save the life of the patient. Nevertheless, the reason why I always pushed since 1990 the concept of critical care nephrology as a discipline is because there is no other specialist in the hospital that understands fluid and electrolyte as well as the nephrologist, I think. And therefore, I think that working together is the solution for this. Unfortunately, there is a shortage of nephrologists in many institutions, and this is why sometimes we see the patient too late. But remember, sometimes we see the patient too late for other reasons. One, because they tend to call us a little bit late, and sometimes because we are a little bit lazy. So, I think we should reconquer the importance of the nephrologist, showing that we can partially affect the outcome of this patient by making interventions quite early.
Dr. De Gruyter?
Yeah, Claudio, the sodium thing question was mine, and I just wanted to clarify what I meant. I think serum sodium is very important, and the reason people tend to have low sodium is because of all the riders. People are afraid of putting people in edema, so they give all the antibiotics, all the drugs, tend to give them in D5W instead of D5 saline. And there may be reasons why keeping the sodium high may be better, both in terms of better extraction of lung water. And then Jens Stietze has this whole idea of high sodium helping with immunological status. So I think it would be a very good randomized trial to do CRT and in one group keep the serum sodium as close to 145 to 150 as possible, and in the other group keep the sodium 135 to 140. And I would predict that you would have you would have an easier time in extracting lung water, in extracting edema fluid, and there also may be some benefits in terms of infections. So I think this would be a low-hanging fruit type of trial that you guys could do. Maybe you're doing it.
Well, I think the number of variables in this study will be enormous. Nevertheless, remember, if you're talking about sodium, you're talking about tonicity of water. And basically, you're talking about intracellular versus extracellular fluid shifts rather than intravascular versus extravascular. Because these patients, normal, have vasodilatation. They are septic, and they have lost part of the reflection coefficient for proteins. So changing sodium concentration is not the only answer to the entire structure. I think that what we learned from the past is that these patients... we were very negative in delivering vasopressor, and today we understood that probably vasopressor in septic patients is the answer to the possibility to maintain kidney perfusion and therefore ending up with the optimal fluid balance. In this patient, often you find a overhydration of the pulmonary circuit and congestion in the lung just because too much fluid has been delivered. So, yes, probably it would be very interesting, but I think that the number of variables in the ICU and not always what you prescribe get to the target, so it's going to be really complex. But I would be curious to see it.
So the last question... How often do you use bioimpedance in the ICU? And do you use central venous oxygen saturation?
Well, oxygen saturation and so on is used in every patient, of course. In the ICU, we started using bioimpedance a long time ago, and now we have different devices that are available. I didn't show the second part of the talk that is very interesting because it presents a new system which is based on stroke volume and cardiac output and describe in non-invasive way the typical situation of a patient, whether the patient is hypotensive or hypertensive, whether the cardiac output is high or low, and the fluid status is high or low. So it allows you to drive the three variables. I think that this will be the future. Too much often in the ICU, our intensivists have been concentrated on invasive measurement that sometimes have been quite not optimal in describing what happened. Stroke volume variation, other PICO analysis or LIDCO or others may have helped, but I think that the non-invasive bioimpedance is simple. You can reproduce it and test it several different times on the patient. I know that RRI has Fan-San Zhu, which is an expert on bioimpedance, and I guess that beyond the chronic patient, this is an instrument that should be used in the acute patient.
Thank you so much.